As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
On today's episode of The Glue Guys, we are going to look at the eight biggest questions facing the Nets right now as Nets training camp with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving opens.
And we're opening too. It's our first little rust. Everyone's got rust today.
Welcome back to The Glue Guys. This is Mike Irsalo Bryan.
Hello.
Check us out on Twitter at BK Glue Guys, netsdaily.com, The Athletic. Bryan, virtually hold my hand right now.
Okay. Squeezing.
We have made it. After walking through the NBA desert, starving.
Did you just eat an orange? Why are your hands so sticky? What is that?
I've been peeling oranges because yeah. I'm now in the oasis that is the Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Brooklyn Nets.
Okay.
I'm picking fruit from the tree.
Ah.
The land is plentiful because we are in paradise, Brian.
Beautiful.
Does it feel that way? Does it feel like paradise?
Not until I see those first pictures. I want some training day pictures. I want some GIFs of Ethan Hawke, GIFs. However you want to say it. I want some pictures. I want a mainline Kevin Durant practicing with the Nets pictures into my veins, Michael.
Nailing jumpers, just coming off of the screen so hard, jumping up in the air, the Achilles looking as strong as ever.
What is this, 2005? Why do I want pictures? I want high-res 4K 1080p contact lens over my eyes. I want to close my eyes and see that image. Seared into my brain.
We got a lot on this episode. We're going to do the eight biggest questions facing the Brooklyn Nets this season, where we'll dive into crunch time lineups and are we concerned about Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving's, the buzz, the personality around them. I don't know. But, you know, people are concerned about that stuff. So we have a lot of big questions we're going to face. But to begin the show, we just have to acknowledge how incredible this moment truly is. I mean, the Nets, your Brooklyn Nets, and previously your New Jersey Nets, now have employed Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving and possibly James Harden, though. Who knows what's going on with that? And we have some quotes from Kevin Durant today about the trade, which we'll talk about, too. But it's amazing. I remember June 30th, 2019, when Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving at 6 p.m. officially signed or were told that they signed with the Brooklyn Nets. As exciting as that moment was, we knew that we would not see Kevin Durant. I mean, I thought we'd see him last season. Didn't happen. Mm-hmm. But we are going to see those two play basketball together for the same team wearing.
Michael, I need you to knock on wood, okay? Just we got a month. I just need you to not do the thing, right?
Well, and that's the thing. Yes, we have a month. We have a clean month. So let's all knock on all the wood we find.
Yeah.
Grab our voodoo dolls, our Steve Nash voodoo dolls, because
Wait, why do we want to
Well, voodoo dolls also are good too. Doesn't have to be bad. You don't have to only.
Who's your witch doctor? Who told you that?
Voodoo dolls get a bad rap. You know, they also could be good.
In what
deities?
Yeah. Well, whenever I think of voodoo doll, I think of the thing that you stab to injure.
Yeah, and how I treat my voodoo dolls is I put them in a blanket. I lay them down comfortably. Maybe get them a spot of tea.
Yeah.
I treat it like how kids treat Santa the night before Christmas. I lay out some milk and cookies for my voodoo dolls.
Oh my gosh.
Try to bring positive mojo, not a negative
mojo.
I'm
thinking about how I broke my foot. And that feels like as voodoo doll a thing. It was so random. Okay. Wow. You're blowing my mind.
How is your foot, by the way, just before we get going?
I'm on week six here, no walking, crutches, and I got another 2 weeks, Mike. So we are... I've got dense bones, all right? Not dense enough not to break, but dense enough to take forever to heal. So I've got great bones.
Speaking of great bones, the Brooklyn Nets have great bones. So today is Tuesday. Steve Nash, Kevin Durant, and I think Kyrie is going to talk as we're recording this. But they've been out talking to the media because it's the official start of the Nets training camp. And I just wanted to pick through a couple of key quotes that have come out of this press conference so far. Now, mostly, this is a Zoom press conference, by the way. So on Kevin Durant and his health, he says he's feeling great. He wouldn't say he's 100% because he says, in the NBA, I've never fully ever been 100%, but, you know, he's doing everything that he wants to do on the floor. The interesting quote, though, is about James Harden, of course. What he has to say about James Harden is essentially, KD, this is from Brian Lewis, Kevin Durant on if he's talked with teammates on James Harden rumors. We're all professionals. We just go about our days, do our work, and go home. Whatever happens, happens. And he was asked whether he actually talked to James Harden before about coming to Brooklyn. And he says, this is what he says. Anybody can make up a story that gets traction. I was focused on rehab, but he acknowledges the friendship with Harden and admitted he heard the noise about a trade and we'll see what happens.
Everything you gotta love, like, when people have been truly raked over the coals by the media. Like, from that point on, every question they're ever asked is prefaced with, like, you mother effers at it again. It's like they're just asking if you talk to the guy. Doesn't you can say no. That's an honest enough question.
It is an undeniably an awkward place for Kevin Durant, because I'm pretty confident that he has talked to James Harden about coming to Brooklyn.
So he's just providing cloud cover. So now you're, wow, there it is. That's
Don't
why
you
you're
feel like that's the
coastal media elite. You're the enemy, Mike.
These reports that have come out from Shams Charania and Adrian Wojnarowski and plenty of other people have been so exact about what's been going on. That Harden wants out of Houston and that he has specifically said, I want to go to Brooklyn. That I have trouble believing Kevin when he says that he has not talked about it with James Harden. But I also don't blame him for saying
well,
that.
Well, actually, it doesn't seem like he does say that on its face. It seems like, actually, if I'm, and not to do the terrible thing that we're about to do, but if we're really deconstructing it, it seems like what he's saying is, you know, if we had a conversation, you know, you can extrapolate that, you know, you make it a story or whatever, but like that it could also just be a conversation that's less serious than you're making it out to be. Because I mean, I don't, can you read the exact quote back to me? Sorry, I just want to make sure I can hear the cadence in my ears.
Let me get the exact quote in his voice, please. This is what he says. Kevin Durant. I'm from Maryland too, so my voice is basically Kevin Durant's voice, who's also from Maryland. Okay. I don't know where me saying these words, they don't sound as authoritative. I don't know where you making this story up. This is from Brian Lewis, so maybe there's some translation issues. That me and James talked in workouts. James is a friend of mine. I heard all the noise. Anybody can make up stories and write stories, and it gets traction. Here's my basic point.
It's so he's so like pissed off to be like you can
well,
just tell.
It sucks. Yeah. It sucks. Can we say that? Like, even though he's not being truthful, he's in a shitty position.
Yeah,
because the stories have been out here for 2 weeks. He probably anticipated some trade already of happening or some declaration, clear declaration from the Rockets or from Harden. But yet, because Durant is first up to really speak about it, obviously, Sean Marks, I think, talked about it a week ago after the draft. Like, he's left to kind of answer this shitty question where he's like, he basically, if he's being truthful, would say, yeah, some of the teammates I have now will be in Houston in a week. But I can't say that because
that's what you actually think that he thinks.
Well, I mean, if they're going to make a trade, some Jared Allen's going to be a Houston Rocket.
I get that, but like, you know what I'm saying? Okay, so a couple of layers to this. You think that he has had the conversation, is being not forthright about that, and you also think that this trade's going down in a week. That's what
I said. A week as just to be hyperbolic, okay. But he's like a true person
trying to fabricate some BS in the media, Mike.
He has 100% had this conversation with James Harden. There's no way that he has. And he has, and it's fine. And he's in a shitty position to have to answer these questions.
What does the conversation there look like? Is it so bad to say, like, me and James talked about it and agreed that it would be cool if he played on the Nets? Is that the crux of it? Be like, hey, you should come play for the Nets. We would be awesome that we would win so many games. And he'd be like, yeah, great idea. Let's do that. I mean, is that – maybe I'm being naive to think that that's not like a – just like a fine conversation to have. You can't talk about that. You are being naive.
A little naive, Brian.
I'm not saying you talk about that in the media or whatever in that way, in that sense, but like it's – well, I guess I don't understand the importance of asking the question in the first place. That's sort of where I'm getting at.
So the question has to be asked. The media has to ask the question. But I also think we all should expect – like here's the thing. This quote that's coming out is going to be on Hoops Hype, Hoops Rumors. It's probably going to be on ESPN.com. Probably The Athletic, my own website that I own. I own The Athletic. No one knows that.
My gosh.
That there'll be a story from Alex Schiffer about what Kevin Durant said about the James Harden trade. It is a justifiable story. It's a justifiable question. And I think Durant gave a justifiable answer and basically be like, I talked to James Harden just generally in the world, and I don't want to talk about this with you all. Like,
yeah.
Now, I think the acting like that the story was fabricated, you don't have to say that, but also like he's trying to defend himself. He didn't put himself in this position. He was put in that position because James Harden doesn't want to be in the Houston Rockets anymore.
I don't know. I don't think it's that juicy either way. I mean, I get that people got to do what they got to do or whatever, but you know, we're contributing to the juice to the non-juice already.
To the juice. We're not even really picking the fruit. We're just like getting the pulp.
Squeezing blood out of a turnip here is what we're doing here.
All right, let's do this. So we're going to take a quick break already. And then we're going to dive into the biggest, eight biggest questions surrounding your Brooklyn Nets before the season begins.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
All right. So I was in my basement doing calisthenics and I got a rush of endorphins that spurred this idea. No one has ever done this idea before in the history of podcasting.
Okay.
Eight biggest questions facing a certain team.
That is big. That is a big idea.
But I think that this team, as much of a contender as it is for the NBA title, there are some serious questions surrounding it. And Brian and I are going to try to answer those questions within the format of a podcast called The Glue Guys, a show about the Brooklyn Nets.
Okay,
so I'm going to start off first with the end, sort of. The first biggest question surrounding the Brooklyn Nets this season is, what is the Nets' crunch time lineup? I don't really care ultimately about the starting lineup. I think starting lineups are overrated. What you need to find out is who is going to be on the court at the end of the game. And if anyone's been following the Nets over this time period, they have a glut of rotation players right now, but not a real clear like top five that fits together at the end of a game. So I'm trying to figure out who would be on the floor. I think we can both assume that Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving are going to be there.
Sure.
Is Joe Harris a guarantee?
For me, yeah. I mean, that feels fairly locked in, especially with the contract he's getting. Jeez. it better be worth it. No, I'm just kidding. I do think that just having that that third option, super obvious spot-up shooter is just a thing that most good teams have in such a crunch time lineup. So, I mean, I don't know. Why? Do you disagree? Well,
Alex Schiffer from The Athletic wrote a really good story, which you can find on The Athletic, about, you know, sort of the Nets lineup, who's going to be the backup point guard, backup shooting guard, and all the different sort of lineup machinations that could be. He did not put Joe Harris as a crunch time five. And I think that is a fatal mistake.
Who's he got?
For Alex Schiffer. He has Bruce Brown being one of the closing lineup.
Well, I mean, so I guess we can be sort of more specific about this because, like, you know, unlike a starting lineup, which is normally the same five players unless somebody gets hurt, a closing lineup is generally a little bit plug and play. So if we're talking about like Bruce Brown over 50% of the time, is that the idea? That's sort of
like, well, what's the optimal? I think we're going to figure out what's the optimal closing lineup. Not like who's going to mostly close out the games, because this season is going to be so strange in terms of lineups overall.
So I don't doubt that there might be some instances where Joe is supplanted for Bruce Brown, I guess. But I don't know. I feel like people are pretty high on Bruce Brown. Like that there's a lot of chatter about Bruce Brown, who has not a ton of work under his belt to this point to be getting serious, you know, closing minutes on a potentially championship contending team. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think like here's the best way to think of a crunch time lineup, right? So you have the tent poles of Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, two incandescent offensive talents. The guys you really want to surround them with in like the end of a lineup game situation, particularly if you're trying to score points, is you just want floor spacers and you don't really need anything else. And that's also why ultimately I think for the most part at the end of games, the Nets are going to go centerless and it's going to be KD playing light rim protection. The defense is going to be switch everything. And you're basically going to try to use Durant as, it's not even that he's going to be a rim protector. It's just that he's going to be like a weak side blocker. And yeah, like there's some teams that's not going to work. Like if you're playing the 76ers, you have DeAndre Jordan out there or Jared Allen.
Yeah.
But you also, if you go centerless, you would have Joel Embiid guarding potentially Kevin Durant, which Embiid's a phenomenal defender, but he's not that type of bro.
See, for me, like and in my mind, I think we're all running out KD at the five here for the most part.
Thank you.
And in that situation, we're going all in on offense anyways, because we're, you know, the idea that we're going to be switching everything and KD's not always going to be playing center on defense against whoever is back there. So we're going to be in a weird spot. And so for me, any of these closing time or crunch time lineups are going to be pretty like all in on bombing, you know, threes. That's sort of how I feel about it. So my whole closing time, my whole closing lineup is based on that premise that like, we're not going to be trying to shut down a whole lot on the defensive end to close games. We're going to out offense. Maybe I'm wrong for that. Maybe that's like Steve Nash is already like, you know, getting sick over me saying it because he's listening. Shout out to Steve.
Yeah. I like to call this the Nets semi-sonic lineup, the closing time.
Nice.
Jesus. Nice. Sorry.
No, that's
that fell that's, like a lead balloon.
That is quality. That's quality.
Anyways, yeah. And by the way, Kevin Durant was a Sonic.
Wow, deep.
If we deep all cut. Forget about that.
This guy knows his stuff. Whoa.
My favorite lineup for them to close games with. So what's interesting about it, the guy that I actually think is going to close games, but I don't know if he should, is Caris LeVert. And because if you already have Kevin Durant and Kyrie, if you just run out like Joe Harris and Landry Shamet, two of the better shoot, like Joe Harris is a tier or two above Shamet as a shooter, but Shamet is still like, if he's in the corner or really anywhere around the 3-point line, he is a threat and he can't be left wide open. LeVert, what's going to happen with LeVert at the end of games is that they're going to put like the other team's going to put their center on LeVert, or they're going to basically try to get the ball to LeVert and help off of him because he's the worst shooter on the floor. Now, he's a better, like, it's kind of what happened with Andre Iguodala with the Warriors when Iguodala was on the floor at the end of games. Now, LeVert is probably at this point, I mean, definitely at this point, but LeVert has more versatility in his game, I guess, than Iguodala. But Iguodala was, like, pretty good offensively. So he was
more in that, like, efficiency, older part of his career, right? Like, this is post the Sixers where he's just putting up nummy-nums, which is sort of where Karis was recently.
So I think, to me, it's like, LeVert is going to be out there. The lineup I like the best is KD, Kyrie, Joe Harris, Landry Shamet, and LeVert. And you just don't you don't trot out Jared Allen or DeAndre Jordan. Maybe you would only use them in situations if there was like a dominant, like a Jokic or an Embiid.
Can I say something though? Just one, like, because I basically agree. My one, like, you know, play the feeling, the vibe of the game is Spencer for Landry Shamet. And I know that that's like a contentious one because Spencer at the end of the game has been like a bit of a meme, but there is the slight occasion where, like, up to, I would say, like, in the fourth quarter, up until like 5 minutes left in the game, I think, like, Spencer is one of those guys that can pretty quickly take you from like down 14 to, like, you know, now you're like back in a game, like, relatively quickly. He's that kind of microwave offensive player, and particularly turns on towards ends of games just as like a, you know, because of his innate competitive spirit. So, like, I do think that he kind of, and like, if that's the case, you kind of keep him in a little bit. So there's like places where I think Shamet is, I think naturally Shamet's like the, like, you know, fifth wheel and like a good like complementary player to what is already an offensive overload here. But in some cases, I do think Spencer's going to eke out those minutes from Landry.
Yeah, and the thing about Shamet that I've learned that I didn't know before he got here is that he is a good defender, and he's thought of being a pretty good defender, which really helps his acquisition, because you do need, like...
Oh, you didn't know that?
What's that?
You didn't know that?
I did not know that Landry Shamet was of as being a good defender.
Yeah. I knew that.
Oh, good. I'm glad you knew that, Brian.
Sorry to interrupt. Yeah.
You jerk. Now, Joe Harris is a better defender than people give him credit for.
Got to say it. It's got to be said.
Kyrie is whatever Kyrie is, he's fine. Like, he's not Trae Young, okay? And KD, obviously, at times, is one of the better defenders in the NBA, though you can't expect him to be that every night. And coming back from an injury, he isn't that. So I kind of wonder, is that, like, LeVert in the end of games needs to become wing defender LeVert more than anything else. And that's why he's also, like, a real key part if he's actually going to be a part of this team, if he's, like, not going to be in Houston. Mm-hmm. Because they're going to you're still going to, like, who's going to guard the other team's wing that is above 6'4"? Like, Landry Shamet and Bruce Brown are both probably good with guarding, you know, 6'4"-ish players. But if you have a Kawhi Leonard or a Giannis or someone like a monster like that, it's probably not KD. And so you do need someone out there that can do that. I can tell you it's probably not Torian Prince. I don't think Torian Prince is closing out gates. So we've solved it.
We did it.
Nets crunch time line.
Unlocked.
Question number two. How will Steve Nash, the Nets head coach, handle the DeAndre Jordan v. Jared Allen starting center issue? Now, Brian, I don't know if you remember this, but I said I don't care about starting lineups just a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
You know who does care about starting lineups?
DeAndre Jordan.
DeAndre Jordan cares mightily about starting lineups. We know that because basically it seems like Kenny Atkinson was fired because he wasn't starting DeAndre Jordan. That was a piece of the puzzle.
Can I say, I'm not sure that Jared Allen doesn't also care to some extent.
I agree with you. I think Jared Allen, as sweet of a boy he is, as big of a computer nerd as he is, I think he probably also cares about starting. I'll tell you why, too, because he has an extension looming, and teams usually pay more money for starters than they do backups. It's usually how it works in the NBA. So how do you think Steve Nash is going to finagle this situation? Do you think it's as easy as it being like, we're going to start you, DeAndre, and Jared, you're going to get guaranteed 24 minutes a game, but DeAndre is going to be the starter?
So the phrasing of the question is interesting, because how will I, like, getting into Nash's head is going to be tricky. I'm interested to see what kind of a like political entity Steve Nash can be.
Political beast.
I'll say that if me, the Ted Kennedy of the situation here, I would just steamroll Jared Allen and give DeAndre Jordan, the starting position and the minutes, and then put the emphasis to pull Jared aside and be like, hey, my hands are tied here. Upper management, what can I do? I'm shackled to this situation. Make this a non-question. Make this a no-brainer for me. Get out there and put up your numbers with that second unit and make this make all the sense in the world to insert you into the starting lineup if that's something that you're super interested in. Because that's ultimately we're in the business here of it sucks and it's sad to say, but the hashtag culture part of our transformation, it's done. That has happened. That's the vestiges. That's when you're, and I hate to say this, but when you're kind of a not so great team, that is your marketing ploy to get to the good team, which doesn't care at all about culture and is more about placating your best players. Is that fair to say? Am I way off on that? I mean,
you're 100% fair to say that.
So DeAndre Jordan is part of that political apparatus that is baked into the cake here. I don't know. I guess it's kind of interesting to say that too, because maybe we're overplaying DeAndre Jordan's, because he did come off the bench for a long time. But I guess, didn't love it.
Then Kenny was fired.
Yeah.
And then DeAndre Jordan was started.
So it matters.
I do want to give some context. I feel like back then, at that point in the season, which was in March or February when Kenny was fired.
Different life. Who knows? Gosh.
It would have been February, because March is when the shutdown happened, everything. So DeAndre Jordan was playing about as well, if not actually a little bit better than Jared Allen at that point. So you could kind of couch it as, DeAndre was playing better. But what we saw in the bubble, Jared Allen was top 10 center.
How much do we read into that too, by the way? The fact that he didn't have competition for those minutes gave him some leeway, some sense of freedom to play a little bit more offensively, a little bit more risk-taking ways.
Yeah, he. I think the change that happened is, whilst in the bubble, he felt, and I think partly the effect of Jock Vaughn's coaching, because Jock deserves credit, is that Jock opened up things a little bit offensively, not in terms of making the offense better, but allowing guys a little more freedom to do things that Kenny maybe didn't want them doing. So we saw Tyler Johnson coming in and jacking up mid-range shots like crazy, and we saw Jared Allen handling the ball a bit, not crossing people up, but having the ball in his hands and making passes and getting assists. And he looked more like the Jared Allen we saw when he first got to the Nets, when the team, wasn't so precious and it was more of a work in progress. If I was an opposing GM, I would have saw those bubble minutes by Jared Allen and really been intrigued about trying to nab him now and getting him on my team, particularly if I wasn't that good of a team, if I knew I had minutes for Jared Allen, and I think a lot of teams would. To go back to question number two, how will Dash handle the DeAndre Jordan v. Jared Allen starting center issue? I think DeAndre Jordan's going to start.
Yeah.
I think I've made this comparison before. It would be like Joe Biden coming into office and trying to do healthcare again. As great as the Affordable Care Act is maybe for Americans, it really consumed all the Obama presidency at the very beginning. And if Biden were, saw what happened, I'm sure he wants to do healthcare in a big way. He probably realizes I should probably do other stuff first, maybe smaller battles. And if I'm Steve Nash and I saw that Kenny Atkinson was basically fired partly because of DeAndre Jordan not starting, I would be like, hey, why don't we just have DeAndre Jordan starting? Because if DeAndre's upset, that probably means Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are upset. Where if Jared Allen's upset, maybe only Spencer Dinwiddie's upset. Right.
Not even. Let's be honest. Come on.
Well, they seem very close and friendly. I think they've talked about, but yeah, I don't think Spencer really cares.
No. I mean, that's the problem. You don't have, not that Spencer isn't a powerful political ally potentially. It's just that he doesn't care in my mind. But maybe that's wrong. Who knows?
Third question, Brian. Mm-hmm. What is the floor and what is the ceiling for Kevin Durant's season this year?
So it says in parentheses here, if you have a better Durant one, let me know. And like, so I feel like for this one, like I have an answer for this, which is like, I refuse to talk about the floor because I just don't, you know, that's like, I'm not interested in that. I don't want to see the floor. I don't want to think about the floor, Mike. I only want to
think about the floor.
Because the floor is scary. The floor isn't great. And I don't want to manifest any floors. Okay. I want to manifest ceilings. And the ceiling is like, you know, MVP caliber, like amazing, you know, marching off to a championship. But here's the one that I'm thinking about if I'm using the parentheses is, you know, we're having a weird season upcoming in terms of attendance and schedule, you know, people, the whole apparatus of the NBA is going to be a little bit more fussy than in the past. And as we saw in the bubble, there were some teams that really seemed to thrive and overachieve given that different new context. And then some other ones, I'm looking at you, Milwaukee, who seemed to underachieve due to all the chaos of the new situation or whatever. In my mind, I'm thinking about, like, does Kevin Durant thrive in a situation with all of the new complexities, or is it a deterrent for him, especially since he's been out of basketball for a while? So I'll pose that question to you, but I'll answer it myself also if you want, which is my understanding of Kevin Durant is I like his whole deal, but his whole deal is like fairly antisocial. That is like a vibe that is emanating out of any press conference. Any, not that like he's like antisocial in a like emo, you know, mall emo scene kid way, but just like, well, kind of a little bit, but like a little don't talk to me, but like, I bet he's like incredibly friendly with his friends and a very private person and probably doesn't need a whole lot of outside adulation, to make what he does work. So in my mind, I think he's at a weird advantage with this like audience-less future that we're facing, for who knows how long. So like, that's part of my line of questioning for this is like, do the Nets stand to benefit from all the craziness going on, or is it going to be a deterrent? So anyways, Mike, I pose that part of it to you and you can have, you know, your floor ceiling stuff too, but I don't want to talk that much about the floor, Mike. I don't want to talk about that.
I think the biggest benefit, if we're doing benefits of COVID.
Yeah. That's how to frame it. Yeah. That's how
the good new podcast, the good parts of COVID, is that, and as a media member, this isn't something that is great, but there won't be reporters at practice facilities and games. I don't know if at all, but, you know, consistently, right? And I think the part that Kevin Durant and probably every NBA player dislikes the most about playing professional basketball is the daily sort of interaction that you may have to have with a semi-hostile media base. Though I really push back and be like, all reporters are mean to basketball players. Really, most reporters just want the story. And like, if you're just nice to them for 3 seconds, they're probably going to write pretty kindly about you, you know.
you like, think that now. I mean, like, look at the Kyrie's been raked over the coals for his flat earther. To this day, he can't.
Well, he shouldn't believe the earth is flat. That is sort of his fault. But so I think Durant will actually benefit from the social distancing involving the press and himself as a basketball player. I hear what you're saying with the crowds. I think Durant is, I'm sure like most of these guys, like they actually enjoy sort of that atmosphere, like to be in the cauldron of a basketball game with 20,000 people either cheering you or booing you in some way. The floor and ceiling, I mean, you actually outlined it. The floor is re-injury, and we don't want to talk about that.
No.
And the ceiling is MVP. Like, everything you're hearing about Kevin Durant, of how awesome he looks in these unsanctioned L.A., California practices involving James Harden.
Jeez.
Who he doesn't talk to, but he sees a lot. Is that Kevin Durant looks amazing. Mm-hmm. And if Kevin Durant is who he was, he's a top three player in the NBA. He's amazing. Like, I would just go back and watch what he was like with the Warriors. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of games on YouTube. It's super fun. And he's devastating. And he is such a unique talent that he was inserted into the Warriors Galatarian's offensive system, where everyone was sharing the ball and there's a lot of cuts and it was beautiful and all that stuff. And it basically immediately turned into, hey, let's ISO Kevin, because that's our best offensive play. So the ceiling's MVP. And by the way, Brian, if Durant looks as good as he used to, the narrative around him will make him an MVP, which is like my side. Like, I maybe unveil this take another time, but we're done. I think NBA writers are done with Giannis being MVP. We've dispatched him as MVP, right? Like, wow. he's back-to-back MVP. That's over and done with. Like, they're not going to make him a three-time MVP unless if he adds like Steph Curry's three-point shot to his game. Curry is a guy that could be MVP again, but I don't think the Warriors are going to be good enough now with Klay being hurt. You know, like LeBron, like, what's LeBron going to do differently? What's Anthony Davis going to do differently that's going to change? Narrative creates MVPs. And Durant returning from injury and becoming a 37-8 guy, he would be MVP. It's him or Luka. You know, I think Luka is like the other guy, the narrative would put you. And there'll be 3 weeks of Trae Young MVP talk, and then the Hawks will lose in the first round. So let's not go there.
Perfect. I think I agree with everything you just said.
Question number four.
Great.
This may be short, but how will Kyrie and Kevin Durant play together? What's your feeling? Are you excited about that?
Well, I'm excited for it because I really sat down. I did the thing where I went and I looked out the window, you know, and I put my hands up like this. Let me think. Let me see. In my mind's eye, I tried to conjure like what it looks like when Kyrie and KD play together. And I kind of don't have an answer still. Like, I don't know that they are a tandem that is better than the sum of their parts. And I'm not sure that that matters, I guess, is my other part of it. Like, I'm trying to think of other, like, they don't detract from one another. So there's that, because like, you know, to some extent, they're both like playmaking and playmakers, and Kyrie, obviously, to like a larger extent, has just the virtue of his position. I don't know what needs to happen exactly for this to coalesce into something, some beautiful offensive machine. I don't know that that's the team that we're going to really have. I don't think that this is going to be an overly complicated system here due to the fact that we've just surrounded them with a bunch of shooting, and we're saying, okay, so like, Kyrie, you're in charge of penetrating, and Kevin Durant, you're in charge of scoring all the buckets that, you know, Kyrie doesn't,
all the buckets
if the penetration doesn't work out. That's, I think it's like pretty stupid and simple in that way, and I'm worried about the stupid simpleness, but also like, we've never really had the benefit of watching. I mean, we watched some Kyrie Irving last year. I remember we talked about this, and you and I remember like having had a whole summer worth of conversations about who's better, D'Angelo Russell or Kyrie Irving. Like, if you look at it, it's really not like statistically. And we went to opening night, and we were like, like, that is a stupid. That was dumb.
Opening night when Kyrie first played against the Timberwolves.
Yeah. We're like, that's really dumb, because Kyrie is so like obviously otherworldly, sort of like talented at basketball, that it just made this, it didn't, the conversation on paper is more interesting than the eye test. The eye test, it doesn't stand the eye test. And so that's sort of how I think about maybe this, can Kyrie and KD play together? Like, on paper, there's like a whole lot of intellectualizing that we can do, but like the eye test of just Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving's offensive capabilities, just like, it doesn't need to be a whole lot, a very complicated system, I guess. And then maybe that's a bad answer. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, so Steve Nash in today's press conference said that, you know, it's going to be kind of looking like the 7 seconds or less Suns, an offense that I'm going to dub the Kevin seconds or less.
Very
Nets.
Wow. Really good. That's going to catch on like wildfire, Mike.
Yeah. But it's going to, but he's like, Nash was saying essentially all of the NBA plays like this, the Suns played back when Nash was with the Suns. So it's like, it's not going to look necessarily revolutionary. Not that he didn't say that exactly. And that they want to up the tempo. They want to make it, they want to space the floor. They want to really stress the opposing defenses. And this is a small thing. This isn't going to make the Nets, but he talked about Jeff Green, and he views Jeff Green as a small ball five at this point in his career, which I like to hear.
Yeah, love that.
Which means that we're going to see a lot smaller lineups again with that up-tempo move.
I do want to go back and watch some of the like 2007 Suns, because basically my like in my mind, what happens is every play Steve Nash does basically kind of what I just described, which is like drive that either ends in a layup or a J style, like backed it out to the elbow, and then like there's Amari Stoudemire at the other elbow waiting to like take his turn if he brought in enough defenders and someone's out of position, and then supplant KD for Amari in that situation, and boom, there you go. You have the Suns offense.
Well, and I think like Kyrie does not get the credit he deserves for playing with LeBron. Like, obviously you play with LeBron, you win a championship, like you don't really need credit, but like he is a young point guard who was able to do that for like play with LeBron James. And obviously it didn't ultimately work out. Like, he wanted to leave, but maybe he wanted to leave Cleveland because he knew that that LeBron James was going to leave. Anyways, but like he's done it, right? Like, Kyrie has played with a magnetic, incandescent offensive talent. But LeBron is different than Kevin Durant. I actually think Kevin Durant's easier to play with, just because KD, like, if you're a ball handler, because KD is more of the pure scorer who can be like, here, I'm going to do my moves. I'm Kyrie Irving. But then I'm going to get KD the ball. He's just going to put it up.
Well, there's another,
he's going to hit that shot.
That's true. And there's another part to it, too, which is that, like, in terms of the, not that Kyrie ever really kind of cares about being like consistent in building his own narrative, but like, let's say there is a shred of consistency there. Like, that's his guy. He made the choices. They came together to go on the same team at the same time. It was a different situation socially, politically on the Cavs when LeBron just sort of like all of a sudden is like, now I'm me and you have to deal with that. which for like a, whatever, 24-year-old or 23, however young it was, Kyrie Irving is a you know, different situation. So like, at least in terms of this one, if there's any kind of friction on the court or whatever, there's a huge incentive for, I went back and watched like some YouTube videos about when Kyrie and LeBron were first playing together, and there was like some legitimate beef, and one of them like came to a head. And the next night, Kyrie Irving went out and like purposefully didn't assist anybody, like just had a zero assist game. Like, and that kind of thing is just not, he's more mature than that now. I sense, and one would hope. And also, it's like, it's his guy. It's Kevin Durant. So, you know, if it gets to that friction point, like, I think there's a whole lot less reason to be petulant about it or whatever.
Yeah, and Kyrie said it himself. This is the first time in his career he's actually playing with someone he knows can take the same shots that he can.
There it is.
Which is a super fun thing to do when you have already played with.
Yeah.
LeBron James. No, but I just to sum up, I think Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving will play beautiful basketball together. They are just ultra excellent offensive talents. Yeah. They are both able to handle the ball, but also both able to be off the ball. They're both guys that think about the game on a different level in terms of, you know, like Carmelo Anthony, as great as he was with the Knicks, obviously, classically, his issue was he only could really score the ball, where both of Kyrie and Kevin Durant are guys who get assists and have fit into offensive systems where it requires some type of sacrifice. And I think them two together will be great. Now, if they're also with LeVert, who maybe if his shot doesn't fall on Spencer Dinwiddie, who maybe is trying to feel himself out in this new Draymond Green-esque role that he has deigned himself to be in. So there's a lot of other questions, but I think those two together, I just think it's ridiculous that people have said that, oh, I don't think Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving can play together. It's like, I mean, like, what? Yeah. What's really poorly going to happen on the floor that they won't be able to play together offensively, at least?
And even if it's bad, it'll happen in 7 seconds or less, which is already, you know, fun enough.
Kevin seconds, sorry, or less.
Stupid. Sorry.
Number five. Will the Nets complete a trade for James Harden or Bradley Beal this season? I will say yes.
Yeah, I think so. Yes, I think Harden too. I think that's my guy.
Oh, both Beal and Harden?
No. I'm going Harden. Are you going of the two? You're selecting Harden, I'm assuming.
I think it's actually interesting. I think early it's Harden, but if the season goes on and John Wall and Beal like hate each other, and the Wizards can't move Wall, and things kind of come crashing down and the Wizards do nothing else to really make their team better, and I'm Bradley Beal, wow, I think he could go to the Wizards and say, okay, you know, this isn't working. Me and John aren't we're not vibing. You guys can't trade John Wall. Get me out of
here. You guys need to listen to Michael Smeltz when it comes to the Wizards. Okay. He's got the inside track. All right. I'm going to say it here first.
So I think early in the season, it's more likely Harden. Later in the season, it's more likely Brad Beal. Also thinking that with the Rockets, it's like if Harden's on the team and they don't trade him early on, and let's say like I think the team is still going to be pretty good. I think the Rockets will be. I don't know if the pressure to trade him right away, I don't think it's going to increase. Where with Beal, I think the pressure, if the Wizards are bad, will increase exponentially.
Mm.
And I think in Sean Marks's heart of hearts, he'd rather have Bradley Beal than James Harden, even wow. though James Harden, of course, is just a way better player than Bradley Beal. But yeah. I think he'd rather have Bradley Beal.
Wow.
Number six. This is a tough one.
This is a funny one.
This is also this is in a joke, the file. Well, I will link it for okay. a second here. So number six, have the Nets already cracked COVID? pretty much everyone on the Nets have already had COVID. And if so, if they already cracked it, are they at an advantage?
What about the new guys? Has Shamit had it yet?
I don't know if Shamit. I'll ask him. Yeah. You know, I'll break HIPAA laws
Send him a
and
DM.
Ask him.
Send him a DM.
I don't remember the full list of players. So the reason why I'm doing this is I've seen Bob Windrum, Net Income of Nets Daily, continually kind of tweet out to remind people, hey, Durant has had it. Dinwiddie's had it. DeAndre's had it. Like three other players, including Jeremiah Martin. We don't know. There was the KD and three other Nets at one point. We don't know who the three other were. I think it came out as Jeremiah Martin, but I don't know for sure. Like, and I'm not going to speculate on who the three others
Too late.
Are.
It's already in my head. I've already downloaded that information.
Sorry. Yeah. But, you know, a number of Nets have already had COVID. And
big advantage. Huge advantage. That's what you're looking for, right?
Obviously, the science isn't fully in yet, but there is some immunity. Now, here's the facts, Brian.
Okay.
If a player in the NBA tests positive for COVID, they're out for, I think, at least 13 days.
Mm.
Okay. So 2 weeks. And that's at least. It could be more, you know, depending on health and depending on recovery and all that fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The season's going to be condensed. So 13 days is like five games of a 70-game season. That gets to be a big chunk of time.
Mm-hmm.
If the Nets are a team that don't have to worry about that as much, that is an advantage. So have the Nets crack COVID, Brian.
Yes. You already heard me say it. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. What a fun topic.
Mm-hmm.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Number seven. I really need your help on this one, Brian. Kyrie and Kevin Durant are known for moodiness and saying things that make headlines. Are the Nets going to be clickbait generators or will things be smoother? And by that, I mean, will it feel like being a Nets fan that it feels like almost being an American in the Trump presidency where you're getting an alert from The Athletic or Bleacher Report or wherever you get your internet news? It will be like every day there will be a headline involving your Brooklyn Nets that doesn't have to do with basketball. It has to do with emotions and opinions.
100%. And I think that's like part of the charm. That's why it's not charm. I mean, like charm, but that is part of the complexity of the Kyrie Irving experience. And KD shares in this a little bit, but they have two different like routes into their clickbaitiness. KD's comes from like, like, I'm not going to answer that. And like, fuck you for asking me. And like, you know, but later on, you know, engaging in anyways, but in like, you know, Twitter stuff. And that's great. And I love that. Kyrie's version of it is that he steps on the landmine and doesn't really like realize it until it's swept into the ecosystem of the media and then has to go. And he goes into the whole like explaining himself thing, which has the potential to also like add layers of not great things to it. But so basically I'm thinking about it, like I think I watched First Take for the first time in I don't know how long, like when the James Harden rumors are coming out. And they brought up yet again the Kyrie Irving thing, saying like, we're all going to do some coaching, like not just Steve Nash, as a, you know, as a massive piece of evidence to suggest that he's like a crazy person and he's like a, you know, nightmare to manage. And like, that's going to be a problem for, because you're bringing in another giant personality, which like, there's like, you can say that that's like a, I don't know, a self-aggrandizing thing to think, but to then walk that all the way into like, he's basically like a like disgruntled like nightmare of like a person, you can't manage him and you can't win games with him. That's like the part of it that just hasn't been proven out. Like that's never seemed to be that. He's always been on mostly good competitive teams. Even when like the Boston thing wasn't going great, there was times when it was going really well and he was involved. I just don't know that it like has ever really translated into like the he doesn't win at a super high level portion of it. So all that being said, like, yes, 100% that's going to happen. It's going to continue to happen. And also, I don't think it really is going to matter that much.
Yeah, I unfortunately for because I know that Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving both chafe at the clickbait generation that they both contribute to. The clickbait generation and generation. Those are two different words I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
But anyways, they contribute to it and they don't enjoy it. I particularly like last season, everyone was excited for the Nets to play in Boston for Kyrie's homecoming. Mm-hmm. Why would that be exciting? I don't want to see that. Mm-hmm. That's anxiety ridden. I don't want any of that. But yeah, this team is, it's already being teed up that this team, like we saw it when Kyrie said the thing that he said on Kevin Durant's podcast about who the Nets coach, how the Nets will be coached this year, which is basically like, yeah, Steve Nash is the coach, but I'll be the coach one day. And Kevin will be the coach one day. And mm-hmm. maybe Mike D'Antoni was in the picture then, but Jacque Vaughn will be the coach one day. And it's like, he said that there was actually a context to it, but yet it was latched onto and turned into clickbait, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's going to continue to happen. Kyrie's going to say the things that he's going to say. Durant's going to at some people. And
I think also just fun. And hate to like unpack this whole thing over again, but like in like watching the first take, you know, they're going over this. They really took it literally. Like they think that Kyrie thinks that he's going to like be like with a suit on the sidelines being cooked. Like that's how it was basically like being talked about. And there is, he's not getting any charity, any like charitable interpretations from anybody at this point. Like everyone's willing to like interpret this with the, I mean, that's part of the, like the flat earth thing. It's to a certain extent, he is held accountable because like he went all the way to like the biggest meme you can possibly get for like being an absurdist logical thinker or whatever. Like that is the example that you use if you are not being tethered to the earth. I tried to bring it to the flat earth. But anyway, so like there is some responsibility that he bears for it because that was a bad media cycle. That was a bad season of the episode of the show Kyrie Irving. But I think that we're all holding him to a pretty like nasty standard at this point.
Yeah. So yes, the Nets are going to be in the mill. But it doesn't mean that they're bad. I mean, like just look at any team. I mean, watch that Jordan documentary. The Bulls weren't like the happiest team in the world.
No.
They won 6 championships. They just because, you know, it's not all kumbaya. Mm-hmm. Some of the happiest teams are the worst teams.
There you go,
Brian.
There you go.
Final question for you. Number 8. You know, it doesn't be exact. But if you had to guess now, where do you expect the Nets to finish in the Eastern Conference? And by that, I mean, are the Nets truly the best team, the second best team, the third best team, the fourth best team? I'm not really asking you for like projecting their win total. I really want to find out where you kind of put them in the Eastern Conference tier in your mind.
Yeah.
Where do you put them in the Eastern Conference tier, Brian?
So like, I don't know that I like record wise, not super clear on where they end up in the top, you know, 5 or whatever. But I would say like in terms of competitive thrust into the playoffs, I'm putting them just second behind Milwaukee. That's sort of where I see them. I don't think that Boston has yet another year of just being like scrappy overachievers and will be like sneaking into the like Eastern Conference finals on that basis. I do think that Miami's great, super fun, like probably my favorite, I mean, until we start playing them, my favorite team to watch in the East. outside of the Nets right now. I don't know that what happened in the bubble wasn't some, I'm not so convinced that it wasn't a little bit fluky just because of like bubble life or whatever. I don't know. So, and I kind of have them third behind the Nets, in terms of, again, not records or whatever, just competitive thrust. We're using competitive thrusters. And then, you know, after that, Boston and Sixers and so on and so forth. So that's sort of where I have it. I don't know. That's me.
Yeah. So I'll say a couple, I'm like, as much as we love to make fun of Milwaukee, I guess, like, they are a juggernaut in the regular season, and this is a regular season question, right? Like, this isn't who's going to win the finals. It's regular season question. I think of continue to be motivated, extremely motivated Giannis, whether he signs his max, super max extension or not. That's going to be a powerful tool in a season that is condensed, where other stars may be sitting out games. Giannis just, like, isn't that kind of guy. So, and they added Drew Holiday and some bench pieces. I think they're obviously super talented and intriguing.
Yeah.
But the other guys on the list. So, like, if you're going to, like, if we're just going to put Milwaukee as number one out of respect and history and all that stuff, the other teams are the Raptors, the Celtics, I guess the Pacers still, Miami, Philly, and the Nets. So that's six teams right there. I'm holding up six fingers for that. Toronto lost Serge and Marc Gasol. That matters. Boston, Kemba Walker is going to miss the start of the season, and his status will be updated in January, which is not, I mean, that's like a week after the season starts, but still
January.
He's not starting the season, and Kemba had been showing deterioration of his athletic skills for a while now. So he not being on the team and Gordon Hayward not being on the team kind of makes Boston, obviously they have Jason Tatum, less appealing. Indiana is a team in flux. How good is Oladipo? They have a new coach, all that stuff. Miami, of course, went to the finals, but they themselves, like one of the key players, Jay Crowder, is off the team. And you go to the 76ers, and the 76ers made a lot of good moves, I think, around their team, but who knows if, like, we will ultimately, I think we will find out this year whether Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid are made for each other or not made for each other. We're going to find that out this year. So overall, the Nets are number two, definitively number two. They have the most talent in the East. They have a lot of work to do to make that talent cohesive. They also have the best ability to make a big trade out of anyone in the East. Unless if Boston, I guess, is going to put Jaylen Brown, but I don't really think Jaylen Brown's as good of an asset as we're led to believe.
That's what I think too. I mean, they're continually like better than the sum of their parts, and that's the Boston thing. That's the Brad Stevens veneer on everything. But at a certain point, those things have to start curdling. You know, there's only so much, just slightly competing at the highest level, but not quite there. You can do.
And I think with Philly, obviously Ben Simmons is like an amazing, like if they traded him for James Harden, that'd be incredible. But if they do that, then they don't have Ben Simmons, you know, and so they're losing massive talent and gaining one, where the Nets have all these great talented players that are young and good people, and they could just be traded to some team and you get Bradley Beal or James Harden, which is like a real big deal. So the Nets are number two. Undeniably number two. If Kevin Durant is as healthy as we're told, they are number two. Kevin Durant is that good.
You know what sucks though? I'm sorry to do this, but like the Lakers just, I feel like, had an amazing offseason and they're going to be so good this year.
Yeah. The Lakers are going to be tough. They're like, going to be, they literally were just playing basketball like a month ago.
Yeah, that's true. So
it's going to be tough for them. I have one more for you, actually. This is a bonus question, Ryan. X Factor for the Nets. Who's the
X-Factor.
I'll give you a couple options.
All right, shoot.
Steve Nash's coaching.
Mm.
Sean Marks is general managing.
Okay.
And Caris LeVert shooting.
Those are my choices. And I can't use all of the above. Gosh. You know what? I'm gonna go with Steve. I mean, because I think the Sean Marks's coaching is a known quantity. I mean, sorry, Sean Marks's GMing is a known quantity. I might go Steve Nash's coaching, as people have just basically like fallen on the derision side of the question. I think like I think now with all the assets, like people are like, you know, optimistic that he can be useful in like politicking the situation into working out. I'm holding a small tiny torch that he's just like a legit full throttle basketball genius on both levels, both of the social and parasocial senses and the, you know, deep analytical sense. So I think that we have yet to see like that hasn't been part of the conversation. We've just kind of been like, no, that's Mike D'Antoni's job. That's somebody else's job. Like he doesn't do any of that. He's just there as like a figurehead for morale. And I think that we've maybe undersold that a little bit.
Yeah. So I've been watching a fair amount of Pat Riley interviews lately.
Okay.
Won't go into why, cool. But I have been. Yeah. I see a lot of Pat Riley.
Wow.
In Steve Nash.
There it is.
Isn't that high praise?
Yeah, it is high praise.
No, but I mean that in like the best thing about Pat Riley, if you watch what he was like as a coach and, you know, because Riley liked to be interviewed. Like he, at one point, he wanted to be in movies. He wanted to be an actor in movies. And obviously, he was famously the inspiration for Gordon Gekko in the movie Wall Street, like his look was. And also even another movie, Kurt Russell's character in the movie Tequila Sunrise was based off of Pat Riley. Pat Riley's like this magnetic figure, right? Back in the 80s and 90s and still today, of course. The Pat Riley superpower was that he knew if he did something in October, conversation with a player, a path that he put the player on, that it would pay off in May. And he knew that if I do this now in the fall, by spring, summer, that plant is going to grow and it's going to bear fruit. Nash talks that exact same way. The way Nash talks and I think views basketball is long term, is I'm going to do this now because I know by the time we get to the playoffs, it's going to matter and we're building it. Now, a lot of coaches try to do that. I think the more unsuccessful ones kind of get more into the drudgery of the day to day and blah, blah, blah. And you can be successful doing that. You know, you can be like a tape hound and do that. I think Steve Nash is a big picture thinker. Whether he's going to be as good as like Pat Riley or Phil Jackson, of course, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I think this team needs that. Mm-hmm. They need someone who thinks big picture and doesn't sweat the small stuff and is able to sort of navigate the turbulent waters. The Nets are a fine ship leaving Ireland.
Ooh.
And they're heading for Virginia.
Got it.
Across the ocean, the Atlantic Ocean. And, you know, can they avoid icebergs? Can they avoid sea monsters?
The Kraken.
The Kraken. Is the Kraken only in the Pacific or is it also in the Atlantic?
I thought it was kind of an Atlantic thing.
Really?
You know, the Japanese do have a lot of Kraken art. That's true.
Yeah, and there's the new Seattle hockey team. There's a hockey team now in Seattle, and their nickname's the Kraken. That's the only reason why I asked that. But I guess there's that movie with Liam Neeson as like one of the Titans, you know, the gods and the Titans of the Greek.
Sure.
I think the Kraken was a beast. Maybe the Kraken's just multi.
I mean, it is a giant octopus. That's the basic form, right?
Yeah. Big octopus.
Big octopus. It could be anywhere. They got octopuses in the Atlantic.
Octopi.
Sorry.
Right. So I am bullish like you on Steve Nash and his personality.
Mike, we've done it. Another classic in the can.
What an amazing episode. So we've got so many more fun, engaging, exciting Nets conversations coming into your ears very soon.
Can I do something, Mike? We haven't done Please. A five stars. We want them. We need them. We have to have them in quite a while. And those, while that's true, I also want to read a quick one. You're gonna get a kick out of this. Have you seen the most recent one?
No.
You're gonna look at this. This is by a guy named No Nickname with lots of O's and E's. So I'm doing it. I'm trying to do it justice. And the subject is crazy. It's five stars because we wanted them and needed them, and now we got them. So it's crazy. It's crazy that they give these guys a podcast. Rarely do you hear ordinary people letting loose on air, speaking their truths. This pod is also a trip for me because I'm obsessed with the second guy's opinions. Like, he's low key. I already mentioned he's the second guy, but I agree with everything he says. Say hello, Brian. I swear to God, I didn't write this. And then he says, anyways, good pod for validation of the Nets fan experience. And so No Nickname. Love you. Me especially, Mike is raging right now. He's white knuckles, ready to punch his computer screen because he knows deep down that that's all true. No, I'm just kidding. But we will read all these great reviews if they're really great. That's a fun thing, right? Isn't that fun?
Yeah, that was fun.
That was fun.
Second guy.
Second guy. I am. I've really, you know, billed myself as the second guy. If on the second on guy. The marquee, I am, you know, but that's where I feel comfortable.
You're the best man.
That's right.
And I'm the groom.
That's exactly right.
And who's our bride? I don't know.
These nuts, you know.
All right. Exciting times. The Nets have Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant and probably James Harden in the future. Who knows? Again, we'll be back in your ears as soon as possible.
Bye.